Each and every episode of the Manic Metal Show is brought to you by The Faction Radio. Download the app to your Apple or Android device for free and get involved with the best music from around the world. What more do you want, you Muppets? Crank it loud, bang your head, and join The Faction today.
Fucking metal as fuck, dude!
Please allow me to adjust my pants so that I may dance the good time dance. Welcome back to episode 3 of the Manic Metal Show. This one is killer. I got to talk to Jean-Paul Gaster. He's the drummer for the band Clutch. If you don't know who they are, tune out now and never come back. Clutch are one of the greatest rock bands ever. They've got a new album out called Book of Bad Decisions and it's absolutely killer. Just like every other album they've released, to be quite honest. We talked about a bunch of cool stuff. We got right into the songwriting process, recording with multiple Grammy winner Vance Powell, the time they were held up at gunpoint on their first tour. We talked about Careful With That Mic, which basically takes rappers to task. It's awesome. Please, if you haven't got a copy of the new album, go out and buy a copy of Book of Bad Decisions right now. You won't regret it. Please follow the podcast, hypermanicnoise.com, on Facebook, on all the usual podcast apps. And follow me, Hayden Douglas, at oldmatedouglas on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that shit. Enjoy this chat with JP, drummer for the band Clutch. Strap yourself in for some pure rock fury. How you going, JP?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And I'm stoked to be talking to you. I'm a massive Clutch fan. And a fan of your work as a drummer specifically. And man, I've had the new album for about a week now, and it's an absolute ball terror. Congratulations on a new killer record.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that very much.
No worries at all. Thank you. I'm always excited to hear a new Clutch record. The new record is set for release on September 7th via Weathermaker Records. How does it feel to finally have it ready to unleash on all of us gearheads?
It's great. It's been a long time coming. We started the writing process a full year, really, before we even entered the studio. And we've had the record now mixed and ready to go for, man, almost 6 months. So it's a long time coming. We're very excited to get it out there.
Well, this time around, you took a bit of a different approach and you recorded with four-time Grammy Award-winning producer Vance Powell. And he's based out of Nashville, primarily known for working with country artists and, you know, bands like the White Stripes and the Arctic Monkeys. What was it about his work as a producer that made you guys realize that he was the man to produce this album?
You know, there wasn't one thing in particular that made us kind of make this decision. There was a few things that kind of happened along the way that sort of got me thinking about Vance and the way that he records. And probably the first thing was just hanging out with my brother-in-law, who's actually an excellent guitarist as well. He used to be in a band called 60 Watt Shaman. And for folks who haven't heard about that band, check them out. They made a couple really great records. My brother-in-law, Joe, he turned me on to Chris Stapleton. Chris Stapleton is a country singer that I wasn't really familiar with. But Joe was a big fan of them. And so he and I listened to his record quite a bit. And it impressed me because it was a very different sounding country record than other country records I'd heard. And so that sort of piqued my interest. And then maybe a few weeks later, I was just listening to Spotify, which is sort of how I listen to most of my music these days. And a song by the Dead Weather came up. I'm a fan of Jack White, but this record in particular really kind of jumped out at me. This is a record that he plays drums on. And the sound of the drums sort of just, it sounded like it was sort of breaking out of the speaker. It was kind of a nasty, dirty kind of a sound. And it immediately piqued my interest. And so after doing some research, I realized that Vance Powell was behind these records. Shortly after that, I was just checking out some YouTube videos. You know, as the drummer in the band, I'm kind of the default engineer demo guy. And so I was just checking some YouTube videos out of different guys producing and engineering records, and Vance's videos kept coming up. And that was another one that just sort of said to me, hey, you know, you got to check this guy out. So we did. We emailed him and he responded almost immediately. And it was great because we got him on board actually very early in the writing process, even really before we had all the tunes put together.
It's interesting too, because reading through the press release, a lot of them read the same way when you get a press release. It's always, we wanted to work with this guy because of his approach to recording, and he's going to give us different sounds on different songs and all of this. And a lot of it, I feel, is just a marketing angle. But then when listening through your album, I mean, the bass sound on the title track, Book of Bad Decisions, is completely unique to that track. And then you've got a crazy horn section in the track In Walks Barbarella. You know, there's another track where there's a specific sound coming out of your ride cymbal. The amount of depth and detail he's gone into each song, it's insane. Like, you definitely picked the right guy to take this album to the next level. It's crazy.
Well, thank you for that. We are very pleased. You know, working with him was inspiring as it was educational. It was a really fun experience. He's very knowledgeable. He has a healthy respect for vintage gear. But at the same time, you know, he's not one of these guys who has blinders on and refuses to embrace technology, because when you use technology like Pro Tools in the right way, you can make some really great sounding records. We use these tools as a way to sort of enhance the sound or enhance a mix, and not so much about fixing things really as it was just about using the technology that was available to us. So it was great. We learned a lot about, different ways to make songs and make recordings. And I think Vance had a big part to do with what this record sounds like.
Definitely, man. The results speak for themselves. And you're one of the few bands that every album has been consistently awesome. But this album is, again, I wasn't sure how you're going to top the last two records. What specifically is it about Vance that separates him from other producers you've worked with, I guess? There is something to this record where he really has taken it to a whole nother level for Clutch.
There's a few things, I think, that went into it. I think, firstly, he's very well-rounded in the stuff that he records. He has recorded some rock stuff and some heavy stuff, but he's got pretty eclectic tastes, and I think that has a lot to do with it. There was another part too. You know, he actually started as a sound man, and he toured for many, many years, and he toured with all kinds of artists. A lot of the artists were country artists. So he brought a different angle to how you record a band, how you document a sound. You know, he wasn't somebody who spent, you know, a lot of time working with, you know, metal bands or you know, more what you might call modern things. You know, he really very well rounded, and I think his experience as a live sound man really, I think it resonated with us because we were looking to do something different. Probably one of the most important things we did was actually bringing Vance onto the road with us. We started talking almost immediately early on in the writing process, as I mentioned. So he and I would have a good line of communication going, and once we got sort of the collection of songs that were ready to go to the studio, we asked him to come out on the road with us. And so he spent 3 days out there. And I think that was really, that was super important to the way this record sounded. I can remember him one night sort of just hanging out on stage and watching the band, listening to the band on stage. There was another evening where he spent the night out at Front House with our sound man. And our sound man's been with us for, man, 17 years now. So he knows the band more than anybody. So he had great conversations with Lee. And then there was another night where he just hung out in the crowd and just got in there and just saw what the vibe was like, kind of picked up on what the audience is tuned into. So I think those perspectives really informed the way that ultimately this record sounded. He's unique in that as soon as we begin recording, he's sort of mixing as he goes. This is not a situation where we fix it in the mix or we use a bunch of edits to do something later on. Whatever we're working on at the moment, whether it's a drum track or it's a vocal, you know, what you play, what you record, what you sing, that's what's going to be on the record. So let's get that right now. Let's not worry about we're going to fix it in the mix or it'll be great after we master it or these kinds of things. He's very proactive in that way. And although he's not a musician in the sense that he's able to play piano or guitar, he's got a great ear for music. And I think probably his background and all these sort of diverse styles and genres brought some new stuff to the table that we might not have stumbled on if we'd gone another route.
Listening to the new record, that you can tell that he has taken that time to appreciate Clutch as what you are, which is a killer live band. There's something really unique about watching Clutch live. It's not a mosh pit, but it's also not a bunch of strangers watching a band. The moment you guys kick into the set, all of a sudden it's like everybody's known each other for years. Everybody's dancing, hugging, buying each other drinks. There's this unique sort of thing that I've not found with another band where when we're watching you, we all feel like we're a part of the band at that moment, if that makes sense.
Well, that's beautiful. And that's really what we're going for. When we play live, we want that show to be a unique musical experience. There's not a lot of show business stuff going on. We certainly don't spend a lot of money on wardrobe or hair and makeup, which is pretty obvious. We just get up there and we play. We do it in an honest way, you know, and there's no bullshit involved. I think people are looking for that kind of approach to music. You know, there's a lot of ways to do this thing, and I'm not here to say that one way is better than another. I only know the Clutch way of doing things, and that is that we just get up there and we play as hard as we can, as best we can that night. We try to breathe new life into these songs every night, and the night that you come to see us play is going to be unique to that night. The set list change, the energy changes, the improvisations change. So, you know, what you see that evening is going to be special to the audience. And I think that resonates with them.
Oh, definitely. And it's also, there's nothing wrong with, say, a band like Kiss where there's fire and there's costume changes and just a million things going on at once. But, I mean, you had an album called Pure Rock Fury, and that's what you deliver. We know what we're in for.
And that's what we do. And I think the audience has come to expect that from us.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be downright confused if you started getting up there and there was costume changes and all that sort of shit going on. It just wouldn't feel right.
Yeah, I hear you.
I think there's maybe one other band where I've ever said this, but I've said to people, look, if Clutch play in Perth and you don't think it's incredible, I'll pay you five times whatever the ticket cost. I can't tell you how many shows I've seen at this point, but your show in Perth, Australia, I think it was 2010. It's one of these shows that I'm consistently bringing up to people. Like I said, it feels like you've brought us into the jam room, and not a lot of bands are able to create that vibe, I guess. Is that a part of your songwriting process? When you're creating all this music, is there a defined direction you're looking to head in, or is it, okay, let's see where this goes?
Yeah, there is not a predetermined end result. Rarely do we ever sit down and say, okay, we're going to make a song that's like this kind of a song, and you know, it's going to have a bluesy intro, and then we're going to have a ripping lead, and then, you know, and then Neil's going to sing about whatever the hell Neil's going to sing about, you know. None of that stuff happens. It's all very organic. And oftentimes when we're putting these ideas together, there's actually very little conversation going on. Sometimes we'll play for a half hour, 45 minutes, or even an hour, and we don't really say much to one another, but these ideas sort of just come to life. I think I mentioned before, as the drummer, I'm sort of the default engineer recorder guy. And so I just read the room. I pay attention to what these guys are playing. I listen to how they're feeling the music. And I just keep documenting this idea. So sometimes it might take two or three times to sort of document the idea within the course of an hour. Sometimes it's just once, you know, we get together, we flush out the idea, I push record, and we make a demo of that song. A lot of times the demos that we make in that sort of short period of time very much resemble the end result. I think at this point, you know, we've played together so long that we sort of share a brain, maybe.
There's a definite feeling of cohesion where every song feels like it's just come together so naturally. It's never felt forced. It doesn't matter whether we're talking Transnational Speedway League or we're talking Robot Hive Exodus or the new album. It always seems like a reflection of where Clutch is at now.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So it's been a while since we've seen Clutch in Australia. How long do you think it's going to be before you head back down under?
We're putting the tour itinerary together now. I'm hoping that we get down there within the next year or so.
I mean, it's obviously a long way to fly, and it's a pain in the ass to get here, quite frankly. What is it specifically about playing in Australia that you enjoy?
Well, you know, it took us a lot of years to get down there. Traditionally, whenever we've played in a new city, you know, whether it's Toledo, Ohio, or Hamburg, Germany, it's taken many, many times going through that city before we can really start to build an audience, to build a fan base. For example, we played Youngstown, Ohio, beginning in 1994, and it really took 10 or 12 or even 15 years to get it to the point where we could actually sell out a venue. That didn't happen in Australia, and I'm not sure why. We didn't get down there until we'd been a band for maybe close to 20 years, really. And as soon as we got down there, there were folks who were, they knew the songs, they knew the material, they knew what we were about. It felt very comfortable playing there. Once the show started, I did not feel as if I was on the other side of the world. I felt like I could have been in my own backyard. So for that, you know, we love Australia. I think the fans there are super passionate. Maybe it is because, I don't know, maybe there's not a lot of bands who get the opportunity to go down there, and you guys are very appreciative of the music that comes down your way. I don't know, but there's something very special down there.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a part of it. Like you said, it took 20 years for you to be able to tour here. And that's the same with a lot of bands. You know, we can be fans of them for that long before they come. So when Clutch does turn up, we're all going, holy shit, they're finally here. It's a good feeling for you guys and for us.
Yeah, we're thinking the same thing. Holy shit, we're here.
That's awesome. So, all right, man, we're having a whole hour on the Faction Radio dedicated to Clutch. And we're going to talk about a few of your favorite tunes. Now, I guess the best place to start is with the new record. We've already played the title track, Book of Bad Decisions. What's another track from the new album that really resonates with you, or is one that you're particularly proud of?
Let's check out In Walk Barbarella.
Good choice.
Yeah, we like that one quite a bit. That was a song that got put together a little later in the writing process. The riff was one that Neil brought to the table, the main riff. You know, there's a lot of elements that go into the Clutch sound. I think we have a healthy appreciation for all kinds of music, all kinds of genres. But the funk thing is something that I think sort of sets us apart from a lot of other bands. We grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and so we were immediately exposed to this thing called go-go music. So go-go music is a very particular kind of funk that happens only here in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of call and response from the audience. I think that played a big part in what we do. And also, you know, the sort of the things that maybe more people are familiar with, James Brown or bands like The Meters or Funkadelic. This idea of funk music is very important to us. And I think that's something that really kind of made an impact on the sound. And so Barbarella, for me, is one of the funkier tunes on the record. It's got some percussion on there. And then, as you mentioned, too, there's some horns on there. And that's really thanks to Vance Powell. Vance Powell found the horn section. He was really instrumental in sort of making those parts come to life. And I think this song is probably very special to him as well.
Fantastic. What's another tune from the new record, Book of Bad Decisions, that you feel, I mean, from your side of the stage as a drummer, which one do you listen to and go, yes, you know, this track, I'm so proud of this track. Obviously, the whole album you're proud of, but is there one that sticks out to you that you're really stoked when you're listening to it?
Well, sure. There's quite a few of them. Maybe Give Me the Keys is one of those that kind of jumps out. That was a tune that got put together fairly early on in the writing process. And I think one of the things I like best about it is having the vocal out there as open as it is. You know, in these verses, the band is playing very little, and it really gives Neil a chance to sort of shine. The vocal on that one, I think, is especially important, too, because the lyrics deal with our very first U.S. tour that we ever did. And so this goes back to 1992. And at the time, we'd only been a band for a year. And we had this opportunity to do a U.S. tour. And it was opening for a straight edge band, believe it or not.
Okay.
From Richmond, Virginia. And they were called Four Walls Falling. You know, we didn't really sound like a hardcore band. We certainly had a healthy appreciation for that kind of music. I think the hardcore sound has a lot to do with who we are as a band. But I don't think we were really a hardcore band. The thing that was cool about it, though, was the hardcore scene was very embracing. And we were immediately able to sort of start a fan base kind of based on the folks who would go to see those shows. You'd often see the same people at these shows all the time. So we had this opportunity to tour with Four Walls Falling, and one of those shows took us to a place called Lawrence, Kansas. This was a venue that was literally out in the middle of a cornfield. There was nothing around this venue.
All right.
Being the youngsters on the bill, you know, we were originally supposed to play, like, I think at 10 o'clock at night or something like that. And there was a lot of other bands that got put on this bill. And so we sort of got pushed to the very end of the night. We ended up sort of playing cleanup. I can remember playing our gig and then afterwards, you know, packing the van, knowing that we had to be in, I think we were in Sioux Falls, South Dakota the next night. And I remember packing the van and having the sound man come out. He was pretty angry. And he said, "Y'all stole our microphone." And we sort of looked at each other like, "Well, what the hell are you talking about, man?" And as it turns out, one of the other bands that was on the bill that evening, I guess they didn't get paid what they thought they should have gotten paid. And one of the guys in the band took a microphone. And we ended up getting the blame for that. So this sound man had a friend of his with some kind of an automatic weapon. It was a 22 of some kind.
And Jesus.
Yeah, he came around the corner and he had this gun in his hand. And I think he acted like he was ready to shoot somebody over this sort of $85 microphone. We let it known that, you know, we weren't involved with that and we didn't have anything to do with that. And he let us go in the end. And I told myself, you know, I'm never going to go back to fucking Lawrence, Kansas ever again, you know, dumb fucking rednecks. And I'm quite sure that we were there within 8 or 10 months after that experience. So the lyrics to Give Me the Keys are sort of a tongue-in-cheek kind of response to what happened that night. And, you know, these are the experiences that you have when you're on the road for the first time. You know, crazy shit happens out there. So Give Me the Keys is about that night.
That is a great story. Jesus Christ. It's been 25 years since the release of Transnational Speedway League. And I guess the most well-known track from that record would be A Shotgun Named Marcus. Is there a particular song from that album that you feel really represents where Clutch were back in 1993?
I think that's probably a good song to start with. There were some other ones on there that were much slower. I'm thinking of like Monster Trucks, even Binge and Purge. A big part of our sound at that point was sort of these sort of like proto-noise bands. And I'm thinking specifically of bands like Unsane or Steel Pole Bathtub, Hammerhead. These were bands that were kind of noisy and a lot of the songs were sort of slow in tempo. The Melvins were another one, too. We had a great appreciation for them early on. For me, Transnational is kind of a mixed bag. It's a little bit of looking to where we were at that point, but also looking forward. And I think Shogun Named Marcus is a good example of that, because that song is quite a bit faster than some of the other ones on there. Rats is another one that's on there that's quite a bit faster. But we were just kind of learning about, you know, what it means to play riffs and what it means to play these grooves. And some stuff on that record, I think, stuck with us, and other stuff we sort of outgrew.
One of my favorite records from Clutch is Robot Hive Exodus, which is a 10 out of 10, absolutely perfect record. Looking back at that album, what's a song that sticks out to you representative of that era of the band? What's a song from Robot Hive that you still just love playing live?
Probably one of those is Burning Beard.
Perfect.
At that point, we had made a record with Machine, Blast Tyrant, that is, and Blast Tyrant had a very specific sound, and I think it resonated with a lot of people. When we did Robot Hive, we were looking to do something a little bit more experimental, and some of the songs that we played, I think, were a little bit outside the box for us. One of those is Burning Beard. There's some kind of odd time signatures in there. There's a couple sevens that I play in there, and one of them is sort of a jazzier version of the more straight version that you hear in the chorus. You're sort of just manipulating time and manipulating the quarter note. And at that point, as a drummer, I was thinking a little bit about this idea of swing versus straight and how you can manipulate those two to create tension or to sort of complement an idea or present something that might be a little bit sort of a counterpoint in rhythm. Burning Beard is one of those that sticks out to me. I still enjoy playing that one. And it's still challenging to play. If I haven't played it in a few weeks, I often find myself thinking about it a little bit too much when we're in the middle of a verse.
That's one of the songs, if I have to show people Clutch, Burning Beard is a go-to. I also have a lot of friends that are into hip-hop music, and they're always showing me their rappers, and I say, okay, that's cool, but let me show you a rock band that can do it better. And obviously the track I'm talking about is Careful With That Mic. And you've only ever had the one song that really went into rap territory. And I've always wanted to ask how that came about, because it's bloody brilliant.
Thank you. The song actually started out as a Bakerton Group song. At that point, we were sort of doing this side project, which was just really was just an instrumental version of Clutch. And that gave us the opportunity to experiment with a lot of stuff. some different feels, some bluesier things, and even some stuff that was even sort of funkier than stuff that we were playing with Clutch. The main groove, the main riff, and Careful With That Mic came from a Bakerton Group song, and so it was instrumental. We recorded that song with Machine, and he had just finished doing a record with Head PE. I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah, I remember them.
They were
them.
Sort of yep. They were a new metal band that used some rap stuff, and it was really big at the time. People really liked that idea of mixing rap and rock, and unfortunately, I think a lot of people did it in a real corny way. So we put that song together almost in an effort to sort of poke fun at that movement. You know, there was a lot of other stuff going on, a lot of other bands playing that kind of a style. And we thought it was whack because, you know, the hip hop thing was important for us too. I can remember seeing Public Enemy very early on, Boogie Down Productions, Ice Cube, Wu-Tang Clan. Like this was all stuff that we listened to all the time. Gangstar, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg. You know, as a drummer in the 90s, for me, it was totally fun to play along with that stuff. I would practice with those grooves. I would try to learn those grooves. So a lot of these bands were coming out with these real sort of corny versions of what we thought it could actually be. So we made that song because of that. And I think Neil's vocal performance on that is, as far as I'm concerned, if Neil decided to be a rapper tomorrow, he could be one of the best rappers out there.
Oh, definitely. It's absolutely unreal. And you definitely nailed it, because that's what comes across. It's a bit of a middle finger to, okay, you guys think you know what you're doing? Well, we're going to just do this one track and sum up that it can be done better. And you nailed it.
That's what we were going for.
Fantastic. JP, thank you so much for taking time to talk to The Faction today. Is there anything else you'd like to say before you head off to your Aussie fans ahead of the release of the new album?
Well, just check out the record. And come see us live. We hope to be down there very soon. We love Australia, and we look forward to coming and playing for y'all.
Suck shit! Heavy metal rules!